हरि ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 13. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments, "You have understood about bhakti. Your verses of praise are the proof. I will now teach about jnana in order that you become indifferent to questioning. Please listen. You should consider this. There are two types of objects, permanent and temporary. There are three eternal objects, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan with his associates. The insentient universe made of matter is the temporary object. There are two types of unreal objects, experienced and unexperienced. The experienced unreal objects consist of dreams and magic. The unexperienced unreal object consists of imaginary objects like a flower in the sky or a rabbit with horns." He hasn't met Monty Python. "The first canto of Bhagavatam says the permanent object is the best. Vedyam Vastavam Atra Vastu, Srimad Bhagavatam 112. So, the Lord and his associates and anything connected with the Lord, that's eternal. The material world is temporary. Right? But then you have within that, then the, what do you call it, the experience, then you have unreal, that dreams and magic, they're not real, but they're experienced, and then the unexperienced is, we can just imagine it, but it hasn't been experienced. Right? The one is you're imagining, you're experiencing, the other one you're imagining, you're not experiencing. But still, it's within the context of temporary. So then it's still considered, not unreal. Right? Does that make sense? So the temporary means the eternal is real, because it's always there. The material world is temporary. So generally we use that term, but you can also use unreal. Yes. Like Bhagavatam says it's unreal. So whenever it says unreal, it means it's temporary. Yes. Right? And then within the unreal, there's further unreal. Yes. You know, so there's the unreal that's there, but it's temporary. Then there's the unreal that's not there, but experienced. And then the unreal that's not there and not experienced. So in other words, plenty of illusion.
Yes. If we talk about this, for example, if other people experience this, they're unreal for us?
No, here it means the unreal means it can't be. I mean, the definition here means it won't be experienced.
By us?
No, it means someone else who there's a flower in the sky or there's rabbits with horns.
No.
So that's what it means by here is the unexperienced unreal means it won't be, it'll never be experienced because it doesn't exist.
I was thinking about the person is suffering, somebody else. We don't experience that, so for us it's unreal.
No, but you can experience that they're experiencing.
Okay.
Yeah, so that would fit within the temporary, but real, or the temporary but unreal, however you want to look at it. So it's just a matter of the basic point is that the spiritual, the Lord and his associates, that's actually real. Then the material world, because it's temporary, it's not actually real because it's there and then it's gone. You know what I'm saying? And it appears as though it's something. It's like the set in a drama. It's there, it exists, but it's temporary and it's not actually real. But it gives the effect like it is. You know, it's just like the home gives the effect like it's a shelter. But it's not. It doesn't shelter the soul. It doesn't even, it only temporarily will shelter the body. You know, and then at some point it disappears. You know, you have these old buildings, they're 150 years old, they're falling apart. You know, if they're, you know, really classically made, then they might last a few hundred more. But otherwise, at some point they're gone. In the modern houses, you know, by the time they finish building them, they're already falling apart. That's, you know, that's like the constructor's perfection. It was enough to pass the test, and then the next day it falls apart. Yes.
So, on the level of Mishra Bhakti, we have both experiences, unreal and real, or maybe just unreal, we can't say.
Well, you have unreal, and then you have, how you say, experience. It means you have the externally experienced unreal, you have the internally experienced unreal, and then you have the unexperienced unreal.
Right. So the question is, how is the unreal experience going to turn into real experience?
Because of your connecting it to Krishna. Because the things that aren't real, that are temporary, you know, like the body, the emotions, how you say, the whole family scene and experience and money and social and all these things, those, by connecting those to Krishna, that's where then they take on the nature of real, even though they're not real. It's like iron and fire. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter. As long as you're getting the real effect, it doesn't matter that they're temporary. You know, it's just like you have rice. You know, it's a temporary object, but you offer it to Krishna. And then it's prasad. It has that eternal effect. Mm-hmm. Right? 'Cause it's all Krishna, so it's just a matter of where he wants to put the eternal effect and where he doesn't. Does that make sense? Yeah. So he's always there. It's just a matter of how far you take. So you take it, you deal with it in the context of what is the point you're trying to make. Right? So basically you're taking it that there's the material, which is unreal, and the spiritual, which is real. Right? But within this unreal, then you have that which can be experienced externally. Then those are the things that are you know, like the how you say, magic and the dreams and all that, they're not actually there. You know what I'm saying? The guy doesn't actually cut the girl in half. It just looks like it. So that's why it's experienced, but it's not real. So that's the point. Magic and dreams, they're experienced, but they're not actually real. They're in comparison to something that's externally considered real. Right? And that only has a sense of realness because it's a reflection of the original real. So you're pointing out as Krishna's beyond that. He's real. When we talk about real, he is what's real. And so therefore what's connected to him, that's real. So the associates in the spiritual realm, like that, then they're also real. They're also eternal. And even the associates here that come from there, they're eternal, but the forms they may appear in may not be. You know, in the past times it will be, but just a manifestation where we can appreciate it, it's not. So the whole process is just, you connect it to Krishna, you get the effect, that eternal effect, because it's all Krishna. So the illusion is thinking it's not Krishna. Does that make sense? So, in other words, we're saying the temporary, since it's all Krishna, why it's called temporary. You know, because one, it's changing and all that. But the point is the effect of it is temporary. Right? In the spiritual world, there'll be variety. So there's the change. But the effect of that variety is eternal. But here you experience something, and then after a few moments, that experience is gone. You can recollect it in the memory, but it's not there. In a sense. That happiness that you've got is not still there. It's gone. But in the spiritual world, whatever is experienced, that remains eternally. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, they say, the coward boys are taking lunch with Krishna. And so that taste of those things, that will last eternally. Right? Then the next lunch, you're adding that on top of that. That's why it says it's always increasing. Well, here you eat lunch and you're good for a while, then it drops off, and then you have to start all over again. So because we're not connecting it to Krishna. But when it's connected to Krishna, it gives that eternal effect. So we're having to switch from the idea that the temporary will give us benefit to understanding, no, only that which is connected to Krishna will give us eternal benefit. So.
Can you say that this experience and reality differs in degrees? Prema becomes as in Shraddha it is.
I don't understand which reality you're talking about here.
Bhakti, from Shraddha to Prema. When you say about, we experience Bhakti.
Yes.
And it is real also. And then like, from Shraddha to Prema, like it just goes on increasing in different degrees. However,
it always increases, yes.
Yeah, so at Prema it is the max. And,
why do you say at Prema it's the max? Because it keeps going from there.
Yeah, okay, but I'm just talking about this ladder now. For Shraddha.
Okay. Okay.
So Shraddha, people begin with really very less experience. And although it's real, but still the major portion is that of inexperience because they're not that very conscious. So is it that the experience part depends more on one's consciousness, at how much one is aware of the particular activity that one is into?
The point is as you're absorbed in Krishna, then that experience is there. So only at Nishtha, then we're stable in that consciousness. So that's why then you get a steady experience. Before that, then it will come and go. Mm-hmm. Right? Because the bhajan is not steady. Does that make sense? We're good? Okay.
Yeah, it is explained that the bhakti and Janasatriko is going to speak about the jnana. So when it is, can we say that it is more or less the same thing, bhakti and jnana, at that level?
Bhakti and jnana means you can say as bhakti is the actual jnana, but generally we make a distinction between bhakti and jnana. Jnana meaning that it's knowledge.
But it is conclusive to bhakti.
Yes, but so many things. All the recommended religious processes are favorable to bhakti.
Yes.
You know, like renunciation and detachment and study of scriptures, you know, austerity. These are all favorable to bhakti if they're engaged for the Lord's service.
Yes.
And if they're not engaged for the Lord's service, they only will only give a material result. So it's the purpose of why you're doing it. You wonder if something's spiritual or not, why are you doing it?
Yes.
Right? And so obviously it's to please Krishna, it's spiritual. If you find it's to please Krishna and to please yourself, it's mixed. And if it's to please yourself, by having pleased Krishna, you'll please yourself, then it takes on that material.
Yes.
Right? Because the problem is you'll only try to please Krishna as long as you're going to get something from it.
Yes.
Right, so that makes the difference between karma and jnana. That is, bhakti is an anga of that.
Mm-hmm.
And where the material aspect is just a habit within bhakti.
Mm-hmm.
So it's mixed, called mixed devotional service. So the forms of karma, basically the forms of karma, jnana, and bhakti look the same. But the intent, what do you want from it? Do you want the fruit of benefit? It's called karma. You want the liberation? It's called jnana. You want devotion to Krishna? It's called bhakti.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the same activity. That's why then the Shastra recommends certain activities. Because in the pure state, then that recommended activity is what pleases Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because one's not worried about the secondary, what you'll gain from it.
Yes.
Right? It means you're simply looking at it by performing the activity, then Krishna, then we gain a result to please Krishna. Right? Now, for the jnani, they know that they get that result to please Krishna, but what they're not worried about so much Krishna being pleased as the transcendental situation that they'll be in by doing that. So they're not, it's not about Krishna's pleasure, that's just a symptom. You know, it's just like, let's say you go to the shop, and you're checking different things, like let's say clothes or something like that. So, what do you call the guy who sells? You know, the salesperson. So, their purpose is to sell you something. Generally, you buy something. It's been observed that you buy something when you're happy. So they try to make you happy only because you'll buy. So you understand? So making the person happy is part of the process of selling. You know, in this case, karma. So in other words, pleasing Krishna and karma and jnana is only part of their process. It's just a rule within the whole thing. It's not exclusive, but for the devotees, then pleasing Krishna is the exclusive rule. All other things are secondary. Does that make sense? And so you'll see it in relationship to how it pleases Krishna. That's the meaning of Sarva Dharma Paritya. It's about Krishna. Does that make sense? So now so they're on that platform. That means they want to get the best results for Krishna, and so then they act in the appropriate way according to recommendation. Right? The person in jnana, he acts according to recommendation to please Krishna because that will situate him transcendentally. So it's not about Krishna. And then for the karmi, they also want to please Krishna because then they'll get the material facilities that come from performance of that duty. Right? Because the devotee, they take that result, give it to Krishna. The karmi wants that result for themselves. Does that make sense? So the process is exactly the same. Karma and jnana won't work without bhakti. But bhakti for karmis and jnanis is only an anga. In other words, it's secondary for them. The primary is their satisfaction. So it's been reversed. While in bhakti, then pleasing Krishna is the primary, and the secondary results, that's not what's important for them, for themselves. Now, if you're in mixed devotional service, then you want to please Krishna. That's your ultimate point. But at the same time, is your condition that you would like these material facilities. But the action is the same. Because the action of bhakti to get a nice result for Krishna will get a nice result for you. So it's not a different endeavor. So that thing of thinking, oh, but I have to be practical, I have to take care of the family. But there is no other. You practice varnashram to please Krishna and you will get money. You will have a house. All those things will happen. Because you're doing them to please Krishna. So that means you actually get the money. You actually pay the bills. That's why you have it. You don't pay the bills, then strangely enough, they come and throw you out. Right? Does that make sense? So it's not different. So the conditioning is we're so used to it's the secondary that makes everything work. So we think that bhakti works because of the secondary also. Right? And then because of that we're seeing the secondary separate from Krishna. So the point is that by following the varnashram, then one is comfortably situated, right? The body, the mind, the words, the social things, you know, all these different things are taken care of by that. And in that comfortable position, then you can focus on Krishna. Because if we're too distracted by the material things, we don't think of Krishna. So then as a support for the process, we're following varnashram because it will take care of all these material facilities. You know, and then we're comfortable. But the point is it's not about the facilities, it's about pleasing Krishna, and they come along with it. you know, if you're more conscious of it, then you'll be, you know, that little, that's why it's mixed, because you're aware of the benefits you'll get at the same time you're trying to please Krishna. Right? The karmi is only aware of his own benefits. The jnani is only aware of the liberated part. He doesn't care about the facilities. Right? But for the devotee, he's liberated and has all the facilities. Because that's what's in bhakti. When I say the spiritual world is known as purna. It's complete. So it has all the benefits you can get from karma and jnana. There's nothing lacking. While the material world, then according to karma, you may get some karma, you may get some jnana, but you don't have the bhakti part. So that, therefore, it's all temporary. You end up actually with nothing. Does this make sense? So that faith that by bhakti, everything's included. Right? Does that make sense? Because bhakti is, that's the primary aspect. And then you have secondary. Just like if I say, it's only by cooking, then you'll have lunch. Right? So now, if you understand cooking, then you'll say yes. Right? So it's only through cooking you'll get lunch. Okay. So then, now let's say we take some contemporary, doubts, right, on this point. Now if somebody says, okay, that's all right if by cooking, you know, you'll have lunch, but we have to be practical, you know? You have to, you know, have a kitchen, you have to have a frying pan, you have to cut vegetables and go to the market and put things in the pan. We can't just cook. You understand? That's actually what's happening. When Prabhupada and the Acharyas say you only need bhakti, and people bring up, yeah, but I have to make money. So in other words, what does that mean, you don't know bhakti? Because only someone who does not know cooking would say that to a cook. Cooking means all that. In fact, he knows more about cooking than the person who is on the secondary platform. Because if you don't know what the cooking's for, how do you know what to cook? Like if I say, cook. You know, what's your first question? You know, for what? For who? For when? Why? Because all those make a difference. You know, and all those then are personal. You're cooking for this group of people for dinner, you know, because of a special program. That's going to be different than if you're cooking for the same people and it's just a regular, it's just, you know, you're just invited them over to hang out because they're close friends. Or let's say it's you know, you invited, you know, somebody over, it's a formal thing. It'll be different again. You know what I'm saying? So formal it'll be one thing, just hanging out it's another thing, for a party it's another thing. You change the group, it changes what you do. You change it from dinner to lunch, it changes it from that to breakfast. You know what I'm saying? If I say it's a codicil, it changes it again. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that these details are there, so the person who doesn't understand that, they don't actually understand all of that. And then from that, then it's, I'm cooking these preparations in this volume, therefore then I need these ingredients. These ingredients are gained at this particular places. So that person who says, I'm just being practical, they're actually not that practical. Because if you check in their life, I would doubt that their life is going that great. I mean, in reality, just right up front in your face reality, anybody who'll say that, they are having problems in their material life. Their money, their family, their relationships, everything. But they're confident that it's all happening, but if you look at it, it's not. And that person who goes, oh, okay, yeah, I can try, I don't know how to do, I'm not practiced, they're the ones that has a shot. And there's a good chance that they're probably are doing okay in their family situation. Because they're submissive. They're willing to approach authority. While the other ones, they're independent. They don't approach authority. And anybody like that, it sounds like they're doing great, but all you have to do is ask their wife and you know it's absolutely not going great. Unless the wife's looking at it from a social point of view, and then she'll say it's fabulous when it's not. Yes.
In circumstances when a devotee is experiencing some sickness, and you're going to cook
sickness,
and
just before we get into this, Do you understand the principle we're talking about? Yeah. Okay. So now, could you yourself take that and try to apply it? Have you tried to apply it into the situation you're going to talk about right now? Or is it just that it's different from what I said, and so just for fun we're going to ask it, even though it absolutely, you didn't make any endeavor to try to apply it in your life? You know, and therefore then we're just talking because talking's great.
I actually have a doubt, Maharaj. Maybe you can clarify. I do understand the principle.
But have you tried to apply it into the situation you're going to ask the question on? If you have, then ask the question. If you haven't, think about it. And then if you still don't get it, then ask the question. Mm. But don't just, as soon as it's something different, mm-hmm. you know, that just immediately just throw it out. Because that is, how you say, that is without thinking. It's just the gut reaction. But the point is we're supposed to try to clear those doubts and all that and think about, especially at this level that we're dealing with here. You understand? The Bhagavad Gita level is for gut reactions. But you see is that the Gita ends with you understanding that is beyond that. Right? Then you have the Bhagavatam and all that, and so now we're dealing with this you know, end conclusions of the Bhagavatam. Which you see is right there in the beginning. This is 1.1.2. So it's always been there. We only become aware of what it says in the first three verses of Bhagavatam when we get to 11th and 12th canto. Then we start to understand. Oh. Is that okay? Because otherwise to find, we also have to remember is in the Vedic context, the exception proves the rule. The West takes it that the exception breaks the rule, but it doesn't because it only applies in that one situation. You understand? So we have to be careful that we're not doing that because then it just throws it into issues. You know what I'm saying? Like that. And so then it's a particular taste. Like you'll notice, if I'll keep it on this just on the words platform, it just goes by. Yes. And if I drop it down just to kind of push it a little bit, immediately it brings up the issue things. And then, okay, now we can talk this. So it's taste.
Mm-hmm. A bit.
Huh?
A bit.
Yeah, yeah. Just this. Yeah, yeah. You understand? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So we're good or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. In order to speak about the permanent object, first the impermanent objects are described. I am all beings. I am the universes consisting of the jivas and their enjoyed objects. Since I am non-different from my Maya Shakti and my Jiva Shakti, the jivas are called temporary objects in this case because of their covering of ignorance. Right? So they're acting as, just as iron acts as fire, so the jivas, even though that's their position to be that, they can also be out of the fire, so then they just act like iron. But their natural position is of fire. Right? So that's where we're referring to the actual practical of what's going on. Right? In the conditioned state. But in their actual thing, they're liberated. They're not have anything to do with this. But they identify. So you're trying to get that jiva who's identifying with the mundane to give that up. Okay? That permanent object is then explained. Right? Because we're used to the impermanent. So the descriptions will start there and then get to the Lord. Or sometimes you see as they'll start with the Lord and then also include all this other, like you see in the prayers. Much of the time that they'll start with the Lord and then come down in all his glories of how he's everything. Like that. Sometimes you go the other, but here we see Krishna's talking. So then he's saying is that, you know, I'm all these things. And then I'm beyond that. And like Krishna says, you know, the Chaturshloki, he is everything. He's everything that you are experiencing in value. And he's beyond that. So, yeah. The permanent object is then explained. I am the second and third Purushas, the Antaryami of all the jivas in a universe, and the Antaryami of the individual jiva. Right? So the Antaryami of all the jivas in the universe means he's the super soul for all souls. Right? And then that's as Garbhodaksha. As Kiradaksha, he's the super soul for a specific soul. Does that make sense? Now, why the distinction? Now, let us say, okay, you have... now, all living entities, all species, generally speaking, they have the concept of children. Right? I can't really say that bacteria do, but let's go in for more our experience. Right? So now that childness of that, how that is there, how Krishna enters, how everybody gets that experience of, the parent-child relationship. That's as Krishna as the super soul of all jivas. And because of that, that's why one jiva can talk to another about their kids and they all sit around and laugh. Right? Does that make sense? Otherwise, if there wasn't something common, you'd talk about your kids and the other go, what?
Fun.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, so that's the point. So then it's there.
Mark, can we say that Garbhodaksha Vishnu would be specific, general, and Kshiradaksha would be specific?
Means he's specific, but you have the generic aspect of jivas and how it acts, their experience and all that, the modes of nature.
That's the general one.
Yes, yes.
So we can define it like that.
That's one way to define it. Yes. Because he's also the super soul, you can say, of the universe. In that, but what's the point of the universe without the jivas? He doesn't need to be the super soul of dead matter. And so that's why he's saying he's the second and third, because that's within the universe. You can talk about Karanadakshai, but then you're talking about that beyond that, the primary creation. But that's already represented as Garbhodakshai. Because that means that portion of the primary creation that's applicable for this universe, then that's controlled by Garbhodakshai. All the universes, that's Karanadakshai. So. And I manifest all these beings, Bhuta, Bhavanaha. So also you could say all the situations that are there. So that means the body, mind, work, whatever is not the jiva. That's all, you could say, arranged by Garbhodaksha Vishnu. Right? Then the living entity's interaction with that and the results they get in that direction, that's all controlled by Kiradaksha. In other words, all the situation is Garbhodaksha. What you do with it is Kiradaksha. And therefore, what results you get. So, because when you're dealing with these, when the Lord, it means so many aspects are there. So in a particular situation, we look at a particular one. Right? So when you say, can you describe it like that? Yes, you can. That it's for that situation. And then you look at something else, it'll be...
So we say that Kshiradaksha Vishnu is the one, the witness, and the one who gives permission.
Yes, yes, yes. But that there is, that there is ground to walk on, and that potency that the ground holds you up. Right? Because like, let's say you're in the heavenly planets, you're walking on the heavenly planets. Now, when your karma is up, you fall through. It was holding you up before, but now you don't have the fall through. So there's a potency that holds you up. So that's Garbhodaksha. But yes, then your karma and that cycle, your involvement, him trying to bring you to Krishna consciousness, that's Kiradaksha. Same person, just different flavor. Like that. So we're attracted to things in this world because of Garbhodaksha, Vishnu. But the goal that we want to get from that, that's Kiradaksha. So that's why he's Aniruddha. So. That permanent object, okay.
And Garbhodaksha Vishnu is Prajumna?
Prajumna, yes. And Kiradaksha Vishnu is Aniruddha. And?
Garbhodaksha.
Karanadakshai is Sankarshan. And then you have Mahanarayan, who's Vasudeva. Yeah. And I manifest all these beings, Bhuta Bhavanaha. I am the first Purusha, and I bestow these jivas with various bhavas, such as Dasya, Sakya, Bhuta, Bhava, and Ha. I am the Vedas, Shabda, Brahma, which are my breathing. Right? So that's why we don't go against the Shastra. We don't doubt the Shastra. We can ask questions to make it clear, but it's based on the principle that we have faith that the Shastra is correct. I don't understand it. Does that make sense? So there's a difference. That's the meaning of submissive inquiry. Is I accept that the Shastra is correct, the Acharyas are correct, but I'm not, from my, you know, applying my intelligence to it, I'm not understanding it. So therefore, I ask a question that will bring out the clarity of that so that I'm able to appreciate and then take it further into application. Right? So that's the process. But when I doubt the scriptures, so when it's explained and I find a doubt, and in my mind it's that, okay, it doesn't apply, that's not submissive inquiry. Because the purpose is not to understand the scriptures. The purpose is to find a way around the scriptures. Right? Or to find what I would call a loophole. Right? So if I can find a loophole, then I feel good because it seemingly is authorized. But if I can't find a loophole, then I'll just say it's not practical and it doesn't apply and it's Kali Yuga and we can't do all these things. Oh, and we're Westerners.
Yeah, it mentions that bhakti has been explained and now he's going to explain jnana. So is it that always, like, acharyas, they mention what is the goal that is bhakti and then how to achieve that?
Yes, you have that. But the point is bhakti is achieved by bhakti. It's not achieved by jnana. But in our conditioned state, then we tend to be attached to things. So the using the religious process of jnana, that helps us give up that attachment. Because we're not giving it up by the mind. So we have to use the intelligence. Right? It's kind of like a crowbar. You know crowbar? No? You have a big, it's kind of like a big long piece of iron that at one end it's got a like a hook in it.
Yes.
You put it under a nail and, you know, you can wrestle with it. And no?
Yes.
How do you call it?
America, we call it a crowbar. I don't know why a crowbar, if crows use it or something, I have no idea. The first crowbar was seen, a crow was using it, so therefore then the Neanderthal then picked up the idea and then... No?
No problem.
No problem, okay. So, yeah, I am the Vedas, Shabda Brahma, which are my breathing. I am the impersonal Brahman realized by jnanis. These two are my forms. There may be a fear that the Vedas are not eternal since they are a form of sound related to ether, which is material. There may be a fear that Parabrahman is unreal since it is not definable by words. To remove those doubts, it is said, these two are eternally existing. Sardartha Darshini, 6:16:51. So it's Krishna's breathing, and then how much of that breathing is revealed. So in other words, there's unlimited knowledge. Right? Because Krishna is knowledge. Right? Adhikarna 2. The senses are 11. Hasta daya dikaranam. Sutra reference 2, 4, 5 through 6. Adhikarna Prakashika. Here in this Adhikarna, the Sutrakar demonstrates the sum total of the senses to be 11. In contrast to the opposition's mistaken stand of 7 senses. Based on the Shrutis, there are 5 knowledge-acquiring senses, the ear, skin, eyes, tongue, and nose, 5 working senses, speaking, receiving, moving, excreting, and pleasure, and the mind, making a total of 11. Footnote 6. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur confirms that only the Vaishnava Vedantas can arrive at proper conclusions for any spiritual queries, right? Because others will have a different motive, so they're going to interpret the scripture. That's the meaning of hermeneutics. Is how do you interpret? Right? Just like you can say, is for Bhagavatam, Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam, the hermeneutics is all verses are seen in light of that. Right? So for us, then the Dasamul, then you see all Shastra in that light. right? And that is given by Krishna. So that's the point. Lord Chaitanya is given the Achinta Beda Beda Tattva, he's revealed that, and therefore then the Dasa Mool. Right? And so we see is that there's no problem in that applying it in the Bhagavatam, because Narad Muni, he gave the Achinta Beda Beda Tattva understanding to Vyasadeva, and then Vyasadeva compiled the Bhagavatam. So it's the same thing. In other words, that is how the Vedic philosophy works. Yes.
Previously, there was the whole discussion, I just don't remember, I think it was still here, about the senses and how we group them, the elements. Remember?
Yes, yes, yes.
And then it was accepted that it can be grouped differently.
Yes.
Remember?
Yeah, that's in the 11th canto, Krishna gives that.
Yeah.
But it's just a matter of they're saying it's this way and not that way. We can see it in what they're talking about, but they're leaving something out on purpose. In other words, this is the standard, like this. If you look at it as less, because you'll sometimes say it's the five senses and the mind, so we only count six. Like that, because you know that when you say sense, it means all the others, so you don't have to get into all of them all the time. You know, like you say Duryodhana and his brothers, you don't have to list them off. Is that, yeah. But there's some reason that they are taking only seven because they have a particular purpose they want to gain from that. So that's the thing. We can see all of them, but the standard way, if you say how many senses, we'll say 11.
It's quite likely, like when we say seven, we say that the cause is there in the effect, like that
too. Okay.
But for them, senses, there's no cause beyond the senses. That's the way they...
And so they stop there.
That's why you have to point it out back that more than...
Yes. Does that make sense?
No, I didn't hear.
He's saying is that they're taking what, the five senses and the mind, and then cause and effect.
Generally, when we say five, then we prove that the cause is there in the effect. That's how when we just say senses, we don't speak about.
We don't have to speak about that, but they do. They'll speak about cause and effect, or don't speak about cause and effect.
They don't speak about. They don't accept the philosophy of the cause is there in the effect.
Okay. Because of that, then therefore it's all. Because also when we say senses, it can also mean, or if you say the material elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, then we also include that from ether then comes, sound, and also comes the ear.
Mm.
Right? So then that means you actually end up with 20 elements. Right? Then you have the mind, intelligence, false ego, and polluted consciousness, so you get 24 elements. So that means, based on that proper understanding, then you can use different numbers, depending on what you want to bring out. You know, and sometimes also when they use these smaller ones, much of the time, Pradhan, Mahatattva are counted as part of that. You know, because they're just using a very concise the whole thing, because when they say sense, for them that means the whole thing. Because the 20 elements, right? Does that make sense? The 20 elements, that will be in the senses. And then the mind, we can, by saying mind, it means the whole subtle body. So with just that six, you can say that. Then they'll have Mahatattva, because Mahatattva is sutra. That's why we're even here. It has the false ego, it has the desire to enjoy it, it has all that. So it actually makes the application of the senses, you know, what it is. And then all that's based on Pradhan. Because that's the ingredients. Without Pradhan, you don't have anything else. But without Mahatattva, there's no reason why you'd be doing anything. Then within that, then you have the mind and the senses. Is that what I'm saying? And so like that, you could say that is a complete understanding of the creation, but it's understood as that's coming from the Lord. And you don't count him within that because he's beyond. But he'll be mentioned. Well, the others, they'll mention and stop there. That's where the problem comes up. So then they don't really understand how it works. Does that make sense? Yeah. So in other words, if they're using something that is bona fide, their reason for using it's wrong. So that's why it's being contested. You know, it's like just like, let's say someone says, no, but you know, according to you know the instructions and that, we can take care of our family, right? Your household, you can take care of your family. Yes, but that doesn't mean you don't do any sadhana and don't produce maintenance. You just sit at home all day and smile at each other. Then you know that's not what it's saying. But it's saying no. But it says I can take care of the so then even though it's a bona fide thing, you have to point out how they're using it as wrong.
So for us, Maharaj, for general devotees,
right?
It means they should be very careful in those things, because to explain it, you have to know the philosophy.
That's the point. And so the idea that Prabhupada's idea in the 60s was by mid 70s, the devotees would be discussing the philosophy at the level we're discussing now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because that was the idea. That would be the level that the leadership would be working at. And so, because of all regularly hearing this, you grow up with this, and then after some time, then you also can function that way. Because it was mentioned once that we were discussing these things. It was like in Hungary, and generally. I'm not sure what they were. They were always generally using Mahabharata. I'm not sure what we used last year. But it's generally just go through the Mahabharata. Every year go through, another chapter or two like that. Because you go through the culture and everything like that. And all the questions and stuff like that. So a few times, Shivaram Maharaj would be doing something, coming from, some program or that. And he'd be outside and he'd stop at the door. And he'd listen for a while. And then he'd go do whatever he's doing. And he mentioned to someone is that you would have to know some philosophy before hearing what we're talking about. Right? Then it makes a lot of sense. And if not, then, it consistently doesn't make sense. So at least there's a consistency there. So that's the idea, is that it's supposed to be, is that the study of Prabhupada's books is supposed to be a standard thing within the movement. And from that, then you can discuss all these kind of points. Does that make sense? Because in the beginning, you'll be discussing more, you would say, in the first six cantos of Bhagavatam. But with time, it would be more emphasis on the last, because of the aspect of the pure devotion. So when you come more to the jnana yoga, being engaged, it will be more on that side. If it's more karma yoga, it'll be the first. Mm. And if it's just trying to figure out which way's up, that's going to be Bhagavad Gita. Right? Yeah. In other words, if your background's coming from all sound you so low that you'll have to look down to look up, then you need Bhagavad Gita. Somebody said. No. Okay. Any spiritual queries? Srila Bhaktivinoda confirms that only the Vaishnava Vedantists can arrive at proper conclusions for any spiritual queries. Swarupam astito yatma swarupa shakti vritita varantyeva nijatmanam upadhi rahitam vachaha. When he is situated in his original nature, by his own power, the soul gives the correct answers to these spiritual questions. Answers free from the touch of matter. Right. So that means that when you're situated in your natural position, this knowledge is inherent in the jiva. Mm-hmm. Right? It's just naturally there. So what we're doing, we're not putting in knowledge. That's what the scholars think, because I'm, putting in knowledge. No, you're bringing out what's already there. And why isn't it there? Because it's covered. Does that make sense? So it's the natural. That's why it's not in. Prabhupada gives that point. It's not an imposition on the mind. It's the natural position of the living entity. How they would think. How they would view. And it's generic for all jivas. Right. So in the spiritual world, they all have that same way of viewing the Lord. Now by taste, it'll have a finer detail, but the principle is exactly the same in all the realms. Does that make sense? You know, so in Vaikuntha, he's God, how you say, and therefore they worship him. In Braja, he's God, and they don't care that he's God. They worship him anyway. But the point is they all know his position. Right? So in the one, because it's important in their service, it's brought to the forefront. Well, in Braj, it's not, so you don't even have to bring it up. If it comes up, it's not a problem. So when the acharyas come here to the material world, because no one knows Krishna, they can speak about it. Right? Does that make sense? But if they're in their position in the pastimes of Krishna, you don't have to. Okay. You know, Balaram will sometimes think about it. You know, that's why you sometimes get him. He has that little smile on his face. He came down to the Jamuna and Krishna's dancing. He's tied up in Kaliya's tail. And everyone's lamenting in that. So a little smile came on his face. It was this, you know, just how amazing is Yoga Maya that, you know, here's the Supreme Lord. No one can bother him. But at the same time, the devotees are thinking that he's at a disadvantageous position, you know, due to their affection. So Yoga Maya covers them so that they can come. And Krishna being the Supreme appreciates. That's the higher principle. So you'll sometimes see Balaram think like that. A couple of places. Yes.
Acharyas give very nice understanding why Balaram also smiled at that time. It's like everybody is in that intense feeling of karunyaras. At that time you're not supposed to love because it is rasavas. But this is done by Balaram because people were so much separation that they need something to cool down. Balaram's smile gave them some hope.
Okay. Nice.
Then Balaramji, then the next scene happens because otherwise they will be in such a
just the tasting of rasa. So that's the thing, is that in the analytical, if we can appreciate the analytical and the mechanical, then it also helps us in appreciating the analytical in the rasa. But as it says here, if one's situated in one's original nature, that becomes inherent. The principle's there, but the detail of all that will be that by association one learns that. So we're trying to get to that. We're not actually trying to become scholars. That's the things we deal with this, but it's not about scholarship. Yes.
Well, this very same point is brought out in order to prove that bhakti is not dependent on any other thing because jiva
has it. Because the jiva has it. That's why all the secondary means these are there because the tendency is to think because of the religious principles. That's why bhakti is going so well. You know, it's just like, oh, preaching will go so nice if people think that, you know, we're charity, you know, it's like all the other groups are giving in charity and people don't see that we are. So if we do all that charitable kind of position, then that will give us a good, you know, status. But it's a social status. It's not a spiritual status. And that social status doesn't have any effect on others in a spiritual way. But that's not appreciated because they think bhakti is being supported by that. You know, I mean, in other words, as a support means as a foundation. Not supporting means that it's a supporting role. Supporting means that without it, bhakti would have no foundation. So that's a lack of faith. And so they'll get involved in that, do all these things. But the point is that it may be appreciated, but it's a temporary thing, and it doesn't have any effect on them taking up Krishna consciousness. You know what I'm saying? So it's not like an effect that, oh, if you do this, then, you know, that people leave us alone and we can now preach. You know what I'm saying? You know.
So generally, within the Vedic context, whatever allows us to kindle that inherent quality, we...
That's what you do. That's what you're constantly doing. You're constantly associating with devotees more advanced with the idea that it will somehow or another spark that interest in prema. Right? And so just that more you associate, it starts to grow. Right? But as it grows, because the point is it's always continuous. It's not, that's the point, it's not linear. Because that means it's just one on one on one. You know, it's just like this. It adds up. So the previous is there, then you add this experience, then he adds to it. It doesn't go away like in the material. So the more you go, the quicker it becomes. So in the beginning, it seems very slow. Right? And then it picks up very quick. But at the same time, it's also the purification. There's so much to purify. You know, so the gross things, that's being purified, and then you start purifying the subtle. The mentalities and the moods. Not good. Influenced by matter in different ways, the souls imprisoned in the material world give a great variety of answers to the questions posed in the second verse of the first chapter of this book. Those souls who, by spiritual realization, by understanding the teachings of a genuine spiritual master, know the truth about the soul, give the correct answers to these questions. These questions have each only one correct answer. The three questions posed in the first chapter, second verse of the book are: 1. I perceive this world. Who am I? 2. What is this immense material world? And 3. What relation have I with this world? Right? So then there's that we're the soul. Well, you know, what this material world is the Lord's energy. And the relationship I have with it is that of Yukta Vairagya. Right? There aren't other answers. Now there's details of how you will apply that. But there's only these answers. So that's what I'm meaning. That's the common point of there. Now in detail you see oneself or die will apply it in one way or in another way. But that principle of that, you're using it in connection with the Lord, that won't change. Right? You know, they might have a different name for it, a different phrase for it than Yukta Vairagya, but it'll be the same point. Same principle. The souls influenced by the material nature give a great variety of answers to these questions, answers recounted in the first chapter of this book. In the second chapter, the correct answers to these three questions, the answers given by the self-realized souls, will be recounted. But first we'll consider this question. Who are the self-realized souls? The souls who have no relation to material place, time, senses, and body, and who are instead situated in their original spiritual nature, are self-realized souls. In the book Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.6, which contains the essential teachings of the Vedanta, the pure self-realized soul is described in these words. Muktir hitvan yata rupam swarupena vyavasti tihi. Liberation is the permanent situation of the form of the living entity after he gives up the changeable, gross, and subtle material bodies. Right? So the permanent situation of the form of the living entity. Right? If there's no form, it's not permanent. So only when the permanent form, giving up the material, gross and subtle bodies, right? That's liberation. It can be that one's given up the identification with it, and that's there. And then you'll consider that that's complete when one leaves this body and accepts the spiritual body. Right? So. When he is freed from material existence, the soul is situated in his original nature. Then he is self-realized. Only the self-realized souls will give the correct answers to our three questions. Here someone may protest. The living entity in the material world has a body, senses, and reasoning power. If he renounces material existence, then what will happen to his body, senses, and reasoning power? How will he be able to give the correct answers to your questions, right? Because he has no body or senses in which to, you know, in mind to answer, right? So we can tell is that the person who's protesting here has a bit of a brain. The answer to this protest is that the soul is like spiritual knowledge personified. The soul has spiritual knowledge as one of its natural features. The soul has not only spiritual knowledge of itself, the soul is also filled with light, so that with the light of its knowledge, it can illuminate the features of other things also. In this way, the soul knows both itself and other objects also. This means that the soul has all power to see, hear, smell, and taste. The soul has knowledge as part of its nature. When it falls into the material world, the soul is imprisoned within a series of material coverings. To enable him to interact with the material world, the spirit soul is given a second set of senses, material senses, right? Because you're covered, so then the spiritual senses can't function with the material. So once in that covering, one's given a second set of senses. They function in the same kind of method. I mean, they still do the same kind of things. But it's there. That's why you can use the spiritual senses. But that means they'll only perceive spiritual objects. So you can't use the spiritual to perceive the material. Right. So many sense. Means you could, means, in other words, you can't, means, why is it a need of a separate? Because the soul is part and parcel of the Lord. Right? So they're within the Lord. Now, if you see everything connected to the Lord, that means the material nature you're seeing is Brahman, so you can see it. But you're seeing it in its connection with Krishna, so you don't see it materially. So what the self-realized soul see and what the materialists see are actually different. The physical object may be the same, but the point is the materialist, he sees it as something separate from the Lord for him to control and enjoy, while the self-realized soul sees it in connection with the Lord. Does that make sense? So you're seeing it differently. You can talk, no, but can he actually physically? Of course, but that's the grossest thing. It's just like you're in a situation and somebody just sees the situation, but someone else sees the situation and sees a business opportunity. They're seeing differently. And so does one ask, but can he actually see the things that are there?
And then women also see differently.
Yeah.
Same situation?
Yeah, of course.
Even movies, some women?
Yes. Very, very different. You know? Yeah, Prabhupada said, men will never understand women, women will never understand men. It's just, so that's why you have the etiquette, so that you can actually function. Because the idea is that men think women should see it. They won't. They'll never see it like that. And the opposite. You work it. It's compatible. That's what you're looking for, is compatibility. There's no such thing as sameness. So they're seeing in a different way. So that way they can see it. So they're seeing it through Yogamaya. Because Yogamaya's extension is Mahamaya. So if one is in Yogamaya, one can see the effects of Mahamaya. But one is not under the control of Mahamaya. But someone under the control of Mahamaya can't see Yogamaya. Yes?
Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives example of how a Mahabhagavat sees. And he gives example of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When he was performing his Anchalila, like whenever he used to see a hill, he used to run, thinking it is Govardhan.
Mm.
And then when you see the water, it's like Yamuna.
Yes, because yes. Does that make sense? So in other words, that's the natural position that you see on that level, right? But now, so what we've been talking about here, that technical thing, that's the thing of Jnana Yoga that Krishna was talking about. Because it helps you see the material world connected to Krishna. The other is you're just directly seeing Krishna in his name, form, qualities, and pastimes. But in that position, you're not really functioning with this world, which is fine when you're doing the direct activities. But when you have to do indirect, it doesn't work so great. Right? You know, you don't see Lord Chaitanya holding down a factory job or something like that. it just wouldn't work. Prahlad Maharaj could see Krishna everywhere. Yes. In this way, the soul sees with material eyes, hears with material ears, smells with a material nose, tastes with a material tongue, and experiences touch with material skin. His original spiritual senses, now deprived of their powers. The soul now uses the powers of his second set of senses, material senses. Also, the conclusions the soul draws are now drawn with the aid of material reasoning power. Right, so he uses material intelligence, material mind. At any time you can use your spiritual intelligence, we just tend to not. Right? So, yeah. All of this is great calamity for the spirit soul. Whose natural condition is to be full of knowledge. When the soul becomes self-realized and its original nature is revived, then he can again perform all these activities with his original spiritual senses. Then his reasoning power is again his original spiritual reasoning power. In that liberated condition, with his original spiritual reasoning power, the soul can give the correct answers to our questions. With his own spiritual power, the soul can give the answers. These answers the soul gives are free from all of matter's limitations and defects. The answer a self-realized soul residing in India gives a self-realized soul residing in the northern countries will also give the same answer. A soul living in the spiritual world of Vaikuntha will also give the same answer. And why not? The pure liberated souls did not give answers that come from the great variety of mixtures of the material bodies. Right? It's not from the modes. That is why the answers are not different from each other. Tattva-vivek-tu-tu. Right? So that means Prabhupada, how they see, how the answers they give, that's what we want to be given. That's how we want to see. So that's how we look at things.
Right.
We don't try to come up with something else. Yes.
That means whenever people say that Prabhupada was not modern enough and everything, they just don't understand.
They don't understand. That means they're functioning with material intelligence.
Under
the modes of nature. Otherwise, then they're not using their spiritual intelligence. So when you see what Prabhupada says, that's correct, then you're using your spiritual intelligence. So you're uncovering that. And then with time, you uncover the senses, it all becomes uncovered. But if you think it's no, he doesn't understand, means you don't understand. Because there is one spiritual nature. Then you have the variety within the material world. Why do we call it northern countries? Because of the modes that it's under. Like northern Europe. Why do they call it? Because they're under different modes than they are in other parts of Europe. You know, Western Europe is different than Central Europe. You know, or they call it Eastern Europe, but technically it's Central Europe, because East is over like Moscow or something. You know, so that's it's different. You go down the Middle East, it's different. So we make it according to the mentality. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, if we were just talking, if it's just that, why would we say Middle East? We'd just say tropical. And so the people in the Bahamas, people in Panama, and the people in, you know, Istanbul, we'd all kind of, those are the same thing. But even then, we're counting it because it's the modes of nature. Otherwise, it'd just be the same. So when we see like that, we're seeing under the modes of nature. So we're seeing with material intelligence. And with our material perspectives, you know, with our material senses. So we're identifying and things that way. Yes.
Maharaj, so can we say for the sadhakas, the spiritual and material intelligence coexist simultaneously?
Yes, yes. And sometimes one is a little more powerful than the other. Yeah, it just depends upon how you're looking at it. So in other words, the kirtan's going on, you're absorbed in all that, then one's working, and then something walks by, and then that's the other's working. So the whole idea of the Vedic and the sadhana and the culture and all that is try to ideally be able to function in the spiritual platform purely. But if not, if it switches to the material, it'll switch to the mode of goodness. So it's using the same forms, it's just the perspective is wrong. Right? And then when you correct the mentality, you don't have to change the... You know, it's just like, let's say, you have a dhoti. So it's a dhoti, you can wear it for formal occasions. Right? And you can wear it for just casual occasions. You're doing some work, you can kind of pick it up and tuck it in so it's kind of short, like a damsha. You know, you can use it for different things. You know, it's like you want to take a nap. You can use it as a cover. You can do different things with it. You know, does that make sense? So you have it. The one thing does all those, but to do all those in the modern, you have to have completely different. You know, you'd have to have a suit. You have to have the casual wear. You have to have just what you hang on. Your track suit for hanging around the house. You know, you have your overalls for doing the work. You know, completely different things. So that's the thing, the Vedic, that mode of goodness is actually simple because it's so The last one also came by with a hat, you saw? Okay, because the boys, then they give it to them. Yeah. And they'll be wearing them for probably through the summer. Yeah, so that's the recommendation. That's why we recommend it. It's actually simpler. We take it that, yeah, there's the other
again.
And then the others, see, they want hats also.
Simple life.
Yeah, simple life, yeah. Get a hat, you're happy, right? So, yes, someone has to be... One should appreciate what one's going on, because we take it that, oh, the Vedic is harder. No, the Vedic is actually easier, because everything's defined, right? Because otherwise you just do whatever you think, and if it works, great, but if it doesn't work, now what do? The Vedic, you know it works, so it's just a matter of practicing until you make it work. Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, in that sense, so if the preacher is just initially okay within the condition you are trying to explain, if it clicks to person, and then but you are happy not trying to remove that conditioning, then the person will not appreciate the wide variety of the spiritual nature.
No, because it's a point, as long as you see material variety, you can't see the spiritual. When you see the spiritual, you can see the material, but you actually don't care. Like, why do you want to see that? What does it matter?
That's the main reason they complain that, oh, this preaching doesn't work here.
Yeah, because the point is that it's been shown it works everywhere.
Yes.
When it's used in its natural state. If you try to modernize it, then you may see it doesn't work. But that's because it's not functioning in its natural state. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You take a recipe and adjust it too much, you end up with something else. You know. Okay. Summary of Adhikarana 2. Vishaya. The Sutrakar, having refuted ideas about the senses, which are contrary to the Shruti, now refutes false ideas about the number of senses. Sapta pranath prabhavanti tasmat saptar chisha samadhi sapta homa sapteme loka yeshu sancharanti prana guha shaya nihita sapta sapta. From the Lord come the seven pranas, senses, the seven fires, the seven sacrifices, and the seven planets in which the seven pranas move. These groups of seven reside in the heart. Mundaka Upanishad 2:8. However, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 3:94 says, Dashe me purushe prana, atmai ka dasha ha. There are 10 senses in the mind, the 11th. Right, so then these have to match. You have to be able to show how these 11 are in the 7, but they're taking it, it's not, it's just 7, it doesn't include. Shamshaya, are the pranas 11 or 7? Oh, 7 or 11?
7 or 11.
Yeah, see? They think it's a new thing. It's all there in the Vedas. Like that. In other words, it was the place where all the jnanis used to go and shop. And then it caught on, the other side was okay. You know, it's like, you know, because the jnanis would be up early or stuff like that, or up late or like this, but then, you know, the karmi, because he normally wouldn't go shop at that time, but, you know, they ran out of cereal and milk, you know, for the kids to go to breakfast, so they had to go someplace. The only thing open is the jnanis, 7-Eleven, so then they went there. And yeah. Yeah. Purvapaksha, as stated in the following Sutra 245, Siddhanta, Srila Vyasadeva gets the conclusion in Sutra 246. Which is, there are seven senses. There are seven senses, since this is described in the scripture. There are seven senses only. Why? Because scripture says in all cases that seven senses leave gate, the body, with the jiva. Sages say that the five senses are at peace and the mind and intelligence is no longer active. So those go with the soul. So that's what it's talking about. But they're saying there's only total that much. Well, there's 11 total, but only 7 go with the jiva. Yes.
So the inner motive behind this is like not to prove that the senses are all pervasive. breathing, and then because the Vedas speak the pranas that they move around, so they want to equate the gross senses with the seven pranas so that they can prove back what they want to prove.
Yes, yes. It's always, it'll always be something like that. So that's the... Okay. John. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.